Merkle Media.
Lashback Friday's here. Macroaggressions taking you back to June 2022, episode 239, another Franklin scandal with Nick Bryant. Hey, if you're thinking of converting your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible gold and silver, talk to our partners over at Wise Wolf. Get in their Wolfpack Auto Buy program. You do that at www.macroaggressions.gold. Now enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles and Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Bam.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate you. We appreciate your amazing and continued support in the face of 2.8 million other podcasts out there. I can't believe it, but we have been the number one podcast in the government section of iTunes in America, Canada, Australia, and over 20 other countries. Thank you so much. I can't believe I'm not talking to myself like I assumed I was for the first 50 or so episodes. It's nice to know that there are other people out there listening and getting this information. So thank you all. If you're interested, you can share the show with your friends and family. That's how it grows. I certainly do appreciate that. And speaking of appreciation, my sponsors have been tremendous for us. They helped keep this show going. I want to thank them. C60 Purple Power has been amazing. You can go to their website, shopc60.com, and I'll put the links in all the descriptions. It's an interesting product. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. The guys that discovered it wound up winning the Nobel Prize for its discovery. It's kind of a big deal. It's a free radical sponge. It goes around your body, sorting out, finding free radicals, neutralizing them, and resetting itself and doing this again and again. It's hundreds of times more powerful than any other antioxidants out there. I think most people should just read up on it. Go to shopc60.com. Use the promo code MACRO on your way out. Save yourself a little bit of money. But we love Ken the Scientist. He's the owner of the company, and he's a nuclear physicist who discovered this product when he was working with really dangerous materials. And all the scientists around him said, you got to find out about the C60 stuff. It'll keep your cells alive as it causes damage to everybody else. So that's how he came about it. And now you know about it. So if you're interested, shopc60.com, promo code MACRO on your way out. And also thanks to My Patriot Supply. They've been nice enough to build us a landing page called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can find all kinds of things there. 4 week supplies of food, 3 month supplies of food, water purification, air filters, survival coffee. I assumed all coffee was survival coffee, but apparently there's coffee that lasts 25 years out there, and My Patriot Supply has access to it. If you want to just knock all this out in 10 minutes, you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, get yourself some storable food. Maybe you buy it for your family that lives across the country and you want to make sure that they're set up. God knows we've got supply chain issues. We've got China refusing to move their ships. We've got the Port of Long Beach creating mass chaos there. Russia won't export fertilizer, and who can blame them? So we've got the makings of a real supply chain headache. You don't want to be the last guy to figure this out. So my suggestion is it's probably better to be a month or two early than a day or two late. So if you're so inclined, prepare with macroaggressions.com. That'll get you sorted out. And we thank our sponsors. They make this show happen. Well, I'll tell you, as an author myself, I am drawn to content. I'm drawn to these books that are, well, I don't know, they're legendary status in my book. We've got Behold a Pale Horse by Bill Cooper, Fingerprints of the Gods from Graham Hancock, The Franklin Scandal by Nick Bryant. We've got Nick Bryant with us here. Hey, Nick, good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you. How you doing, Charlie?
Well, I'm good. I wish you didn't have to write these books, but your books really wake people up to what's going on. And my first book is called The Octopus of Global Control. Obviously, I'm dealing with control structures, and like it or not, it's going to eventually lead you to a very dark aspect of control, sexual blackmail, not just limited to the inner workings of Washington, D.C., but it certainly does show itself there. I've always had this sort of balancing act between wanting to keep things positive and optimistic, while at the same time being forced to kind of deal with the reality of the situation. And unfortunately, the reality is that a lot of control happens in some nefarious ways. And your book, The Franklin Scandal, really sort of really made it real to a lot of people. It blew this, you know, I took it from conspiracy theory world, and you really laid out how this all works. Can we just start at the beginning, I guess, and talk a little bit about the Franklin Scandal, talk about what was going on in Nebraska, how that connected through Lawrence King into Washington, D.C., and sort of just start the groundwork there.
Sure. I'm still wondering if there's survival espresso, but
there might be. If there is, I'll tell you, this company's got it.
I'll look them up after this interview. The Franklin Scandal is a very disheartening book. I spent 7 years on it. It's actually quite, I think it's like 500 pages. It might even be too long, but it's about a interstate child trafficking network that the epicenter was Omaha, Nebraska, and there were two primary pimps, Lawrence E. King in Omaha, Nebraska, and Craig Spence in Washington, D.C. And Lawrence E. King was the general manager of the Franklin Credit Union, and it was supposed to give loans to lower socioeconomic people in North Omaha. But in actuality, it was a boiler room, and King just was hawking CDs, and it was a boiler room Ponzi scheme. And King had the juice not to get audited. Federally insured credit unions are supposed to be audited every year. Well, King hadn't been audited in 4 years. And a number of people with the IRS knew what was going on there, but they were told that they had the reins on them. Mm. So at a certain point, that ultimately gets raided shortly before George Herbert Walker Bush takes the presidency. The Franklin Credit Union is raided, and $40 million is missing. And the Nebraska senators, Nebraska doesn't have like a House of Representatives. It has what's called the unicameral. They're basically, it's Nebraska Senate. A number of the Nebraska senators formed the Franklin Committee, which was a subcommittee, and they wanted to dig in and see why Lawrence E. King hadn't been audited in 4 years. How The most money that the Franklin Credit Union was supposed to have was $2.5 million. And how did he bust it out for $40 million? So this subcommittee came together, and as they were starting to congeal, people in social services went to these senators and said, Lawrence E. King is an embezzler, but he's also running an interstate child trafficking network. And what had happened is kids had come forward. One was Eulise Washington, who said that she'd been flown to various locations to be used as a child prostitute. And another girl named Shanetta Moore said that she'd been involved in child pornography since she was like 10 years old. And they both named Lawrence E. King as the principal perpetrator. And other people, there was other innuendo. And so what happened was these social service personnel, they sent letters to not only the Attorney General of Nebraska, but also the U.S. Attorney, because they felt like this had to be addressed. And they were simply ignored. Nothing happened. Much like when Maria Farmer went to the FBI in 1996 to report Jeffrey Epstein, nothing happened. So when these senators formed this subcommittee, these social service personnel went to the senators and said, yes, Larry King busted out the Franklin Credit Union for $40 million, but he is the interstate pimp running a pedophile network. So the senators initially thought it was just financial crimes, and then they started looking into Lawrence E. King, and they hired a great private investigator. His name was Gary Caradore. And he was finding all kinds of witnesses, and it was actually, he was like the Tasmanian devil, just a whirlwind of energy. And he found flight receipts that King was using, all kinds of stuff. I mean, you've read the Franklin scandal, you know how meticulously sourced it is. A lot of that came from Gary Caradore. And he found four additional victims that corroborated the other victims that had come forward. And as he was building this momentum, the FBI started to really come down on him. His phones were tapped. He was followed. Nails were put under his tires. I mean, he went through some heavy harassment. And he realized that he was going up against the federal machine. It was the hunter had become the hunted. And he ultimately realized that he needed definitive evidence, because the FBI was doing a number on these witnesses, getting them to recant their accounts of abuse. And when these kids, the thing about these kids is most of them came from lower socioeconomic dysfunctional backgrounds. And they were given drugs and money if they performed well. And most of them became drug addicts. And at a certain point, they were expunged by the network because they lost their youthful marketability. And ultimately, what happens there is you've got someone who comes from a dysfunctional background who's repeatedly molested, and he's a drug addict or she's a drug addict, and they go on to commit more crimes and end up in prison, and thereby compromising their own integrity. So Gary Caradore saw that the FBI was pressuring these victims to recant, and they were really working very, very hard to cover up this pedophile network. And he flew to Chicago from Lincoln, Nebraska, which was where his office was centered. And he managed to acquire blackmail pictures from one of the blackmail photographers. His name is Rusty Nelson. Now, Rusty isn't the paragon of ethics, considering that his former employment entailed taking pictures of minors and adults in compromising positions. But I've got four other corroborations that Caradore got pictures in Chicago. So he got the pictures that were going to blow this wide open. And if the dominoes had started falling in Nebraska, they would have fallen all the way to Washington, D.C. because this went like Epstein went into the Trump White House and Clinton White House. This went into the Bush White House. Mm-hmm. So Gary Corradore is flying back to Nebraska from Chicago, and his plane mysteriously disintegrates in midair. The National Transportation Safety Board said it was pilot error that caused his plane to disintegrate. And I think that that's kind of silly, but that's the full court press that was going on, that this had to be covered up at all costs. And Gary had a leather briefcase that was like ubiquitous with him at his side throughout the Franklin investigation. And that, that briefcase was never found. And those pictures were never found. And there's a Chinese proverb, kill one man, silence a thousand. Well, Gary Corradore is with his son and killed one man and his son and silenced the community. Because at that point, people realized, and there were other homicides and mysterious deaths related to the Franklin scandal. People realized that this was going to be covered up at all costs, regardless of the body count.
Wow. Well, okay, so this is like, I'm having flashes of Ron Brown, Clinton's commerce secretary, and in Croatia, flying into mountains, and then they find his body, and they go, oh, he died in a plane crash, except he's got a hole in his head, and we understand this is how Washington works when you get a little too close. I think for people that are maybe unsure, there's that famous, was it Washington Times headline, the old newspaper, the VIPs ensnared and yeah. and homosexual prostitution ring in the White House, and it's like, whoa.
The headline was Callboys Take Midnight Tour of the White House.
Callboys Take Midnight Tour of the White House. I didn't know that's an unusual tour to take. I would suggest not one typically offered at the White House. But again, this is part of dirty tricks. And we know that George H.W. Bush's, his presidency was a problem, but his vice presidency was no picnic either, involved in the with Reagan. And so this trail starts in Omaha. It leads to, Chicago, I guess. And then eventually it makes its way east all the way to Washington, D.C. And Craig Spence gets involved. What's the relation? How is this?
Let me get into.
Please.
So there were two grand juries that looked into the child abuse allegations. And I had the transcripts for one of the grand juries, the state grand jury. And both grand juries declared that there was no child abuse. There was no Lawrence E. King related child abuse. And one jury called it a carefully crafted hoax, but it didn't say who the hoaxers were. It didn't say who crafted the hoax. It was a very strange document. But what's really troubling is none of the perps were indicted, but the kids who wouldn't recant accounts of their abuse who were telling the truth were indicted. Paul Benassi was indicted on three counts of perjury. And in Nebraska at that point, one count of perjury was 20 years. So he was looking at 60. Alicia Owen also refused to recant her accounts of abuse. And she was looking at 160. And then a federal grand jury indicted her on eight counts of perjury. So Alicia was looking at 200 years in prison. And she'd been trafficked at as an adolescent. And the state of Nebraska, her trial is really, it's a kangaroo court. And I get into all the malfeasance that's involved in her trial in the Franklin scandal. But she was, and here's a kid, she was indicted when she was 21 years old. She was sentenced between 9 and 15 years in prison. And the authorities really tried to destroy her. They put her in solitary for nearly 2 years. So that's essentially how it was covered up in Nebraska. Oof.
That's vicious, but that's to be expected, of course. I've seen these interviews with Paul Benassi and they the problem with all of these cases is that when you're looking for pristine witnesses, you're really in the wrong industry, because you're talking about kids that are, that have questionable upbringings, being trafficked, being introduced to drugs, they, and alcohol. They don't make the most reliable witnesses. But then again, who is going to be a witness to these sorts of things other than people that are sort of in the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder? So the fact that they threw the book at these people is reprehensible, but also not surprising to me if you know, if you understand how the justice system or the just us system works in America. It protects those at the top and destroys those at the bottom. What happened to these kids?
Well, I found these kids. I had, because of Gary Caradore, I had a leads list of 60 victims, and most of them didn't fare that well. Actually, I found them in projects. I found one in a homeless shelter. I found one in a prison. These kids were just, they were not prepared for life because of what had happened to them prior to them becoming young adults. And it's really a tragedy that that these kids, and I met a number of them. I had to find them. There were, a lot of them were difficult to find because they didn't really use social security numbers. And it was, but then as I found them, I saw all the damage that had been wrought and by Lawrence King and the pedophiles that abuse these kids. It was, it's truly tragic. And because of that, I really worked very hard at anti-trafficking. It kind of changed my whole world a little bit, because before I got into the Franklin scandal, I was a writer living in the West Village, writing about things that were kind of interesting, nothing earth-shattering. But then I came across this and I said, you know, I've got to really dig into this. And I see these inequities, and this is still going on. And, and we saw it again with Epstein, and it's time that the government not be involved in child trafficking. I mean, there's, according to the CDC, 25% of women in the United States have been molested as minors. And which, you know, that's a stunning number, but what we can do is we can, and 17% of a large percentage of those 25%, 17% are molested by relatives. But then, you know, these kids that are trafficked by networks like Franklin and also Epstein, we can put an end to that. I mean, if America galvanized its will, we could put an end to that, because with Epstein, it's so obvious that all these perpetrators have been covered up. And although these, and the thing about perpetrators is they're not going to stop. I mean, they've been getting away with it. The government's been protecting them. There's going to be another Jeffrey Epstein. There's going to be another Lawrence E. King, because wherever there's a demand, there's a supply.
So who was calling the shots on silencing this? This investigation, was it the FBI? Was it the CIA? Was it a, I mean, who's the cover-up? I mean, I know normally the FBI is the cover-up squad when it comes to domestic issues, but I also recognize that it's not, they're not the only ones. We do have the CIA involved. We do have intelligence networks that seek to kind of keep this going. So who was driving the train on protecting pedophiles while silencing kids?
Well, ultimately, that's the Bush administration. And at the time, Richard Thornburgh was the attorney general. And because you're not going to be able to cover up a nationwide pedophile network without someone at the very top of the food chain telling you to do that. No FBI agent or FBI Fieldhouse is going to take on covering up a pedophile network if it's not sanctioned from the pinnacle of power. It's just not going to happen. And with this, the FBI did the covering up in Omaha, and it was the Secret Service that did the covering up in Washington, D.C. And this is kind of interesting. Thornburg ultimately left that administration to run for the Senate for in Pennsylvania. And he was replaced by William Barr. And William Barr put the finishing touches on covering up Franklin as he was the architect of covering up Epstein.
Whoa, I had no idea.
So they were both William Barr was the attorney general for both those cover-ups.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. that makes, unfortunately, a lot more sense here. So
he's a very dirty guy. I would strongly suggest that your listeners Google him and do a little research on him, and they will see that he is not the preeminent guy to be an attorney general.
No, for sure. And his dad is no saint either. We've got his dad involved in, with Epstein early on, with the schools, and we've got his dad writing futuristic science fiction books about slave colonies and raping children and all kinds of weird
intergalactic child trafficking.
Because just going from Omaha to Washington, D.C. is not enough. You have to up it to intergalactic child trafficking.
Yes.
It seems to be the common thread here. Now, we understand blackmail. We know it works. You get, you know, the old days, you catch some guy cheating on his wife and you hold that over his head, or maybe he's closeted homosexual and you can use that. And that worked well in the McCarthy era. But now, you know, when times have changed and you see that and you go, it's not that big a deal. But pedophilia, I feel like that is there's no expiration date on that. That has not been normalized in this country. Hopefully it never is, but although it's quite clear they're trying to push it. But the idea that you could catch somebody with pedophile charges, that gives you access and control over those people forever, does it not?
Well, if you had a picture of someone molesting a child, you would own them. I mean, they're essentially owned. And the blackmail photographer who I recently talked to, I spent a lot of time with him. And one day I said, well, you know, how exactly does this work? And he said, it's like you're on a yacht. And it's a beautiful yacht and it's a beautiful day. And you can have anything you want on this yacht. But if you decide to get off the yacht, the people on the yacht are going to make sure that you drown. So getting off the yacht really isn't an option. You're owned. If you get off the yacht, your political career will be destroyed. Your family will be destroyed. Your reputation will be destroyed. So there's no incentive whatsoever to get off the yacht.
Ooh. That's pretty disgusting. So we've got this power structure in Washington, D.C. They're pulling kids out of Omaha. They're using them for blackmail purposes. Then, and that gets put down after a certain amount of time, a certain number of years. And then we see there's a new guy that sort of appears on the scene, at least to the general public. That's Jeffrey Epstein. Now, those of us that have been watching him for years, he's not new to us, but to the general public, he was. I think it might be the first taste that the general public had that this concept of sexual blackmail using underage kids even existed as a concept at all, you know, let alone that we had been doing it and it had been allowed to happen by intelligence agencies. When did Epstein get involved in this? As far as you could tell, when's his earliest? Because he's got Bear Stearns ties and he's working for Les Wexner and he's doing all kinds of things that have connections to this Bush, H.W. Bush administration with Iran-Contra and all of this. What's his role? Was there any overlap between Epstein and Franklin?
I do not think so. I think the common denominator with both Epstein and Franklin, as I've already mentioned, is William Barr.
Okay.
Epstein was, I believe, started trafficking children in the early 90s. Mm. And as I said earlier, Maria Farmer reported him to the FBI in 1996, but the FBI didn't do anything. And with Epstein, it's pretty interesting because there's the media has been so incompetent with covering him. The media has been primarily interested in salacious dirt. The media doesn't really seem to care about children being molested with impunity. They just want salacious dirt. And it seems like the government and the media had the same agenda to cover this up. And it's truly unfortunate because if our government continues to allow children to be molested with impunity, it's en route to soul death. The soul of our country will just die, or else maybe we're there already. I don't know. But it's a really bad sign that our government is involved with child molesters, protecting them and whatever else they might have done.
Yeah. Do you ever get the feeling that Epstein was running like the East Coast franchise of this? Whereas, you know, sort of like, you take this side, we've got, you know, we've got Peter Nygaard and up in Winnipeg. We've got Jean-Luc Brunel in France. We've got Saville in the UK. We've got Epstein here. You know, we've got Hefner running the West Coast operation, or maybe others running that. So did it seem like it was, you know, that he was sort of allowed to work with impunity?
Well, Epstein has contact. He had a place in New Mexico and also spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. So I think that there are a number of networks that are interlocking at any one time in the United States. And the names that you said, I mean, they might be involved. I mean, Nygaard most likely. But then there's a lot of them that are completely under the radar. We know nothing about them as they're running these networks. And Epstein managed to keep under the radar for a very long time. In 2001, there was an Evening Standard article about him. And it talked about Epstein saying that he was a CIA agent. It's kind of an interesting article. And what's really interesting is that article says that Epstein and Gates go back to the 1990s. And according to our media, Epstein and Gates met in 2011. So if that article is true, what our media has been reporting about Epstein and Gates is total balderdash, lies.
Yeah. Our media lying?
Yeah, it's tough to believe.
That's what they do. They provide cover. We have, ABC News, Amy Rohrbach saying, you know, I had him. We had the goods on him. We had all this. They killed the story. We have a long history of Epstein information being brought forth, and the feds or law enforcement being sort of marginally interested in it. I mean, look, if you're handing over to the feds information about a large child trafficking operation, you would assume that that would be of interest to them. But the reaction, and it always seems to be at the federal level, the reaction, the indifference to it all, I think speaks volumes, right? So they're clearly aware of this well in advance. It's not that, you know, some tip line is going to tell them something they don't already know, but this is allowed to happen. This is the way you control people, correct?
Well, with blackmail, I'll give you a couple of instances of senators people at the pinnacle of power that I definitely believe were blackmailed. Larry Craig is one. I wrote a book, in addition to the Frankenstein, I wrote a book called Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And Larry Craig was a conservative from Idaho. And he was in Washington, D.C. for 25 years, first as a representative and then as a senator. And actually, he had the worst record, from what I understand, of voting against gay rights.
Well, they always do.
Well, he was voting against gay rights. He was getting male prostitutes from Henry Vincent.
Of course.
And then Kirby Dick made a film called Outrage that showed that he was getting prostitutes from elsewhere. And ultimately, as a senator, he is in a bathroom at the Twin Cities International Airport trying to pick up someone who's slapping their foot in the stall next to him. He's a U.S. senator. So he was running around Washington, D.C. for 25 years, having homosexual liaisons. There's no way that he could not be compromised, especially as a family values Republican. Yeah. That's down on anything that's gay. I mean, there's no way. There's just no way that he was not. I mean, a kid with a smartphone on an after school project could have compromised Larry Craig. And I think another one is Dennis Hastert.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Hastert had pedophilic predations going back 30 or 40 years. And despite that, his career was meteoric. And he was the Speaker of the House for 7 years, from, I believe, 1999 to 2007. And he was a strong-arm specialist. That was his reputation as a strong-arm specialist. But here's something that's kind of interesting. Sybil Edmonds, FBI whistleblower, said that the FBI was aware of Hastert going to a place of ill repute, a townhouse in Chicago. So Hastert has these predations going back many years, and then he becomes Speaker of the House. So I believe that his being compromised was an asset to his political career. And I've seen that with other people that I know that are compromised. Yeah. Their political careers are just meteoric because they are the perfect people to put in positions of power because they're controlled.
Yeah. Yeah, that really is what it's all about. What about Barney Frank? We find Barney Frank, I don't know if his entire career, but towards the tail end of his career, he was known to be a homosexual, and there's nothing inherently nefarious about that, and nobody's trying to make that that sort of implication. But there are problems when the rumors are that you're running a homosexual prostitution ring and you're a high-ranking member.
He wasn't running a prostitution ring.
No.
The male prostitute that lived with him was running the ring.
Oh, sorry, my mistake.
Nuances.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, but again, if I'm up at the very, very top in the shadows, out of the way, trying to control people, it would behoove me to make sure that the person that I have in a position of power underneath me is controllable. And therefore, where we as normal, decent human beings look at somebody like Dennis Hastert or these guys as having baggage, I mean, to say the least, baggage, and that being our assumption is that that's some sort of negative quality. The controllers actually see it quite backwards. They see that as being the best quality you can have because it keeps them from going off the reservation, correct?
Well, what's interesting with Hastert is the FBI ultimately took him down. One of his victims was shaking him down, and Hastert was getting money and paying him clandestinely. And the FBI could have easily taken that Hastert victim and threatened him, and then it would have been all over. But they decided to indict. The Department of Justice decided to indict Hastert. And for some inexplicable reason, Hastert got off the yacht. I believe he was making a ton of money in his lobbying business.
Mm.
And I believe that he had gotten a little too greedy. And because he'd been Speaker of the House and was able to strong arm people, I think he thought that he could get away with it. I mean, that's kind of my surmise on why Dennis Hastert got taken down, because it didn't really make a lot of sense. If you look at how he was taken down, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. It would have been much easier for the FBI to threaten the victim that was shaking him down.
Yeah. Right? As they had in Nebraska, right?
As they have in every state of the United States of America.
Yeah. Well, we have these interesting characters. We get Washington, D.C., home of the most powerful people on the planet. We get the number 49th most powerful person in Washington, D.C., at least according to some publication, to be James Alefantis, the owner of a pizza restaurant called Comet Ping Pong. Then we get the salacious stories of nefarious activities happening, but, you know, in the basement and all of that. And it gets into some very weird territory that is easy to be dismissive of and all of the like. But what doesn't change is the fact that somebody thought that this guy was one of the most powerful people. And I'm wondering, did you ever come across any information that linked James Alefantis, his boyfriend, David Brock, who runs Media Matters, their tight association with the Democratic Party, you name it, everybody in the Obama campaign, the Podestas and so forth. Did you ever find anything that confirmed that the stories about James Alefantis were actually true?
I looked into Pizzagate, and at the time I had a lot going on in my life, but I did look into it, and I thought that I had a lead that would answer a lot of questions, but it just resulted in a brick wall. So I don't know what to make of Pizzagate. At this point I'm agnostic about it. I looked into it. I dedicated some time to it. I could not prove one way or another what was going on there. If the lead that I had acquired had there been fruition there, then I would have gotten a lot of stuff, but it just never panned out. So I never knew what to make of Pizzagate. Yeah.
Neither did I. I felt like there is an understanding that that happens. I didn't need a refresher course that could actually be a thing. I also knew that there's traps that are set to sort of draw people in and then say, well, you guys have all been discredited. So I never jumped into it too far, but I always kind of kept an eye on it to sort of wondered if anyone else had found the goods on that. Well, I'll tell you one guy that I know for sure was deeply involved in this, and it's sort of going back in time a little bit, and maybe, you know, you can speak to this just based on your geographical proximity, and that's Roy Cohn and his the New York lawyer that had ties to McCarthy, he had ties to Trump, he has a real dark history. Would you ever find, or did you ever really do a deep dive into Roy Cohn and what he was doing? He seemed like he might be running some sort of homosexual blackmail entrapment operation as well. Was that the case?
I have a tendency to think that Roy Cohn was probably running a pedophile blackmail operation. I've gotten that from various sources. And given that Roy Cohn was an ethical eunuch, I don't doubt that. And given his life, the way that he lived, the money that he had, the connections that he had, it wouldn't have surprised me if Cohn was in fact running a power broker pedophile network that was hooked up to intelligence. I've heard that from a number of people. So I have a tendency not to doubt that.
Yeah. Well, and then I'd put this guy in the same sort of, category as Roy Cohn, maybe a decade or two later. And I mentioned him earlier, that's Jimmy Savile. His relationship on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean to the very powerful people there, obviously the BBC, the Queen, her sons there, you know, he was brought in as a mediator for Prince Charles and Diana's wedding. Like, they were having marital problems. Was Satan unavailable for that job? And my goodness. So what did you ever find Savile's?
The Savile story, it crossed the Atlantic, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that never crossed the Atlantic. Sir Peter Hayman ran an organization. Sir Peter Hayman was the number three man at MI6, which is the British version of the CIA. And he ran an organization called the Pedophilic Information Exchange, or the Pedophile Information Exchange.
Pi.
There were a number of rich, powerful guys that were part of the pedophile information exchange, or PIE. And Ted Heath, the prime minister of the UK, was one of them. And Margaret Thatcher covered all that up. I wrote an article on my blog. My website is nickbryantnyc.com, and I wrote an article called Pedophiles and Prime Ministers, and I get into that. It's because if you just focus on Savile, which is what our media has done, you're going to miss the whole story, because what Sir Peter Heyman was doing was pandering kids out, and I'm pretty sure that blackmail was involved in that too, and some really sadistic pedophilia. And we've seen that in Franklin, and we've also seen, and this has never really come out in the media, there were some real sadists in the Epstein network that's what they did, is they loved to beat up little girls, rape little girls, even though the little girls were served to them on a silver platter.
Was Peter Heyman involved in the Elm guest house in Dolphin Square? Was he running that?
I do not know.
Okay. Yeah. That there are these care facilities. That's another thing. That's a common thread, it seems, here, is the care facilities in all over the place. But the Child Protective Services and foster care here in the United States, elsewhere, there's a name for it wherever you go, but there's the state-run Child Protective Services. Every time I get on that topic, I start to find that it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of protection going on there, except for the people, maybe the creeps at the very top. Did you ever find anything that connected CPS or any of these foster care programs, systems with child trafficking?
Well, Lawrence King was getting kids out of a foster care home.
And was that Boys Town?
No, he was getting kids out of Boys Town, which is an orphanage, but he was also getting kids out of a foster care home, the Webbs. I mean, the first girl that came forward was trafficked from that house, and Ulysse Washington. And I think that there were probably other foster care homes that King was plundering. I found the social worker who was putting kids in those respective foster care homes. And I tracked her down to San Francisco. She, as soon as Franklin started exploding, she went to San Francisco. And she would never, ever talk to me. I don't blame her.
I wouldn't talk to you either if I were trafficking kids like that or putting them in positions.
I called her repeatedly, and I realized after quite some time that she would never, ever talk to me. So that's how that ended. But yes, Lawrence King was plundering foster care. He was plundering Boys Town, probably plundering Ootahalie, which is a girls' facility. He was the president of the Girls Club of Omaha. That's where some of the victims were picked up. So he was getting kids from all over. Now, Epstein, he had a number of people that were acquiring kids, that would scavenge kids for him. Ghislaine Maxwell was the best, but there were all kinds of girls and women that were out looking. And then he had that connection with Jean-Luc Brunel with Eastern Europe, where he was buying children.
Yeah.
Buying children in Eastern Europe. So guys like King and Spencer, Jeffrey Epstein, these are super predators, and they know how to acquire children by any means. They'll acquire children by any means necessary.
I remember being a kid growing up in Southern California and hearing about the McMartin preschool situation in Manhattan Beach. And I wound up after college moving and living in Manhattan Beach for a long, long time. And I always thought about that. Did that ever get into your orbit? The trafficking that was happening there, there were underground tunnels, there were things about that sort. Did you ever wind up crossing anybody that knew much about that?
If you want to learn about that, a professor at Brown University, Ross Shea, wrote The Witch Hunt Narrative. And he went back, he spent 15 years on this book, and actually he conscripted a number of students to help him. And he looked at all the quote-unquote satanic panic in the 1980s. And he really showed that there were children that had been molested in those cases. And the son, the Witch Hunt Narrative brings really a lot of evidence to show that the son was molesting those kids. Mm. So the mother might not have, we don't know, but I would suggest if your listeners really want to dig into this and go deep, the Witch Hunt Narrative is probably the book that they should read, other than the Franklin scandal.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Your book really lays it out there. It opens everybody's mind up to the very real scenario that this is happening. It's easy to be dismissive, or we want it to pretend like it's not there, but this is happening. It happens for a variety of reasons, and it leads you eventually, it'll lead people to the finders. And I'm curious to know what you found about the finders, Cole. I mean, this one, people have done some outstanding work. I know Derek Brose has been worked on Who Will Find the Finders, but did you ever come across anything? What was your opinion on what the finders were doing and who was running them and where they went?
There's a really good interview on my podcast where I interview Elizabeth Voss, who wrote a 3-article series on the finders. The Finders is what got me into all of this. They were a very strange cult that was seemingly trafficking children, and they were busted, and then the CIA quashed the entire case on it. Now, there was a big document dump on the Finders last year, and basically the document dump was exonerating the Finders of doing anything bad, but actually, Elizabeth Voss did a really good job of putting all that together. I gave her, I ultimately, after the Franklin scandal was published, I came across what happened with the finders is that there were two finders who were dressed very nicely with 6 kids that really looked feral in a Tallahassee park. Although the finders were out of Washington, D.C., these were two finders and these 6 kids. And this, concerned citizen called the police, and the police took one look at that situation, and I believe that there was some child pornography in the van, and they arrested the two finders on multiple counts of child abuse, and the kids were put in protective custody. And the Tallahassee police report that I have, a medical doctor says that 2 of those kids have been sexually abused. So ultimately, what happened there was the CIA quashed the entire investigation. But the document, there was a document put out by Ramon Martinez, who's special agent for U.S. Customs, because U.S. Customs investigates child pornography, that kind of delineates what they found when they served a search warrant on the Finders Washington, D.C. warehouse. And that's what first got me into this whole thing. I mean, I came across Franklin after that, but that document opened me up to possibilities that I wouldn't have thought were possible. I read that document and I was thinking, what have I missed in life? I thought, you know, I was well-read and I'd been in academia. I've been a writer for a number of years. And why would the CIA quash a case involving some very, very strange people doing nefarious things to children? Why? That did not compute. I understood the coups because we have to protect various transnational corporations. But that I did not understand. And that's what got me into the Franklin scandal, is I started looking for situations like that where pedophile networks were tied up to intelligence, and certainly the Franklin network was, and I believe that the Epstein Epstein network was also.
Jeez.
Well, look, I wrote, like I said, I wrote a book called The Octopus of Global Control. I wrote it when I was 44 years old. I was very well aware that Danny Casolaro wrote a book called The Octopus and wound up dead for that. I understand what happens when you get on the wrong side of these authorities and start talking about the things that they don't want you to talk about. I'm curious, what was the response to your book?
Well, the thing that's the people that were responsible for things like Franklin and Epstein, that dark, malignant corner of intelligence, they've done everything that they possibly can to marginalize the Franklin scandal. If you go to the Wikipedia entry on the Franklin child abuse allegations, it reads nonsensical. And you can go to my website at nickbryantnyc.com, and I show you the battle that's been waged over that Wikipedia page. It's locked down. They won't, those editors, those dubious editors, whoever they are, will not let you touch that article. And it just it's very short and it reads like complete nonsensical. And that's done a lot of damage to my book, for sure. And Amazon has also definitely done a lot of damage to my book. But it's a very good book, and I spent 7 years on it. So people read it, and they recommend it to other people. I mean, that's why it keeps selling. But it's been a very difficult road to hoe because there's been so many difficulties involved with trying to get that book out, and no one in the mainstream media has touched it.
No.
And it's kind of interesting. I was supposed to go on a news station and talk about, it was when the Epstein thing was erupting, and I was getting some play, and I talked to a junior producer, had read the book, The Franklin Scandal, and wanted to get me on to talk about Epstein. So I talked to her boss, and it was kind of a brief conversation. I said, yeah, sure, I'm willing to go on, and yeah, let's do it. And her boss told my publisher that she talked to me and I sounded incoherent. I wasn't rational. I mean, now, I've been accused of a lot of things, but never incoherence and not being rational. So that was, and now I don't know what happened there, whether she was just friend, but I do know that there was a studio executive that was threatened who was thinking about making a movie about the Franklin scandal. So there's other things that I just don't know about that have caused, I mean, the Franklin scandal has been a very, very, as I said earlier, tough road to hoe.
Yeah. Well, look, you certainly do get points for tackling the tough topics between Franklin scandal and Confessions of a DC Madam. You are putting yourself in a position for the authorities to really have a problem with you. I can't even imagine what you're working on next.
I've got a book coming out in July. It's called The Tale of Watergate. The Truth About Watergate, A Tale of Extraordinary Lies and Liars, where I completely deconstruct what people think about Watergate. And what's really interesting about Watergate is that there was a CIA sexual blackmail operation right in the center of Watergate. And over the years, it's been kept very, very quiet. But that CIA sexual blackmail operation played an integral role in Watergate. And when you read my book, you'll see. So, and I learned about that when I was researching Franklin, and I had some time this last year to write it. And I could not get it published by any mainstream media publishers. So I went with Trinity, which has published my two previous books.
Yeah. And well, listen, big thanks to Bruce DeTauris, who's been on this show before, for making this introduction between you. They're doing great work over there at Try and Day. They're publishing the books that everybody wants to read, but the actual publishers in New York City won't touch with a 10-foot pole because they know about the blowback. So if you're looking for controversial books that are going to be really awesome, Try and Day is probably a good place to start, I would think.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, look, I appreciate the work that you're doing. What's the best place for people to find you, to support your work, to get on the pre-sale list, maybe for this new book or whatever?
Yes, you can contact Trinday and get on the pre-sale list. The book will be out in July. My website, nickbryantnyc.com. You can go to my website and check out my podcasts. I just started a podcast and... you can check out my podcast. I've been doing some blogging. There's a lot of information at that site.
Yeah. Well, I did. I watched your podcast interview with Elizabeth Voss about The Finders too. That's Yeah, that's good. Really informative. I suggest people support Nick, find his work, support the podcast and do what you can, because this is not going to get mainstream support, clearly.
And I'm on Twitter at @Nick_Bryant too.
Awesome. Well, if you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. God knows the algorithms aren't going to help us at all. You can follow me on Twitter as well @macroaggression, and you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate everything that you've done.
Have yourself a great day.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.